Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
What's wrong?
It's... I don't know, but... this feels wrong somehow.
Miles Edward O'Brien, I am still your wife.
Well, technically, yes.
Technically?
No, I mean, of course you're my wife. But you're also 10 years old.
Beverly said it's actually closer to 12.
Now, that's not the point.
So what is the point? Is our marriage over?
I didn't say that. But, well, until they find a way to reverse this effect. It's hard for me to ignore the fact that you're a little girl.
What if they can't find a way? What if I'm like this for the rest of my life? What does that mean for us? For our family?
All right, last chance. Last chance for peas and poos.
Slurps
and poos. Slurps and drinks. Do you need to unwrap any candies, Jesse?
No.
You're all good.
I have a banana. I think that would be
a balaner.
I have a balaner.
Who's on it? Is balaners on it?
Balaners
and you have it. And you have blooper berries.
No. No, I eat them.
Blooper berries.
Let's go ahead.
Blooper berries and balaners.
For the sake of our audience, let's go ahead and start the podcast.
No.
Okay. Now you don't want to start right. it. You're always like, start,
no.
start it. You just think, we do a bonus one.
Recalcitrant Dan. Classic. Okay. All right. Yeah. Today is. Wait.
Something's going on.
That's not how we start the podcast. I apologize.
Not you. I want mommy.
Okay.
mommy.
All right. Let's see if we can do this properly. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Hello, I'm the classroom computer system. What can I do for you today?
Apparently not much. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is...
that's true, though.
Episode 100. No.
You did it again.
I'm sorry.
It's the third. We have so many more episodes of this.
It's the third.
That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It's the third week in a row.
We have like 450 episodes.
I honestly don't know why that's happening. I was staring right at the number my notes say very clearly. Number 249.
Just so ridiculous.
Yes. Okay. All right, so it's episode 249 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. We got that.
So, son, how are you?
Would you like to play a game?
Let's go play.
I would like to get the title of the episode out. Because it's just...
ready?
It's part of the format is the thing, right? Like, I know.
I'm sorry.
People write us and they're like, we know what episode you're talking about because it's in the title and we looked it up and we sought it out or whatever. I know, but it's just in the format of the show now.
He likes to have the structure.
Yeah, there's some sort of key things. There's a foundation that you have to stick to some degree.
I wouldn't worry.
I mean, you're right. I wish I could take that advice to heart, but you need some lodestars, you know? Not lone stars. Okay. All right. This week we're discussing TNGs. That's Star Trek The Next Generation. It's the episode from that show called Rascals.
Rascals.
Called Rascals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've wanted to do this episode for a while because I work with a couple of rascals right over here. Who are these guys? Look, Dan, Jesse, you guys are a couple of rascals.
It starts out...
just stop that!
kind of funny because Picard's given his log entry and it's he just like naming who he's with on this little like side trip and it's like he's just naming these random people. It's like Keiko, Anson Rowe, and Guinan. It's like they're all like, you know, they're all cool characters, but it's all like
we gotta do some random intros.
Side characters.
No. Dan's good. Dan's being very good because yes, we do have to do some of the intro stuff. But Jesse, it is a good segue what you bring up to our planned second break fun 'em up, in which I propose we discuss both how do we think they selected these particular characters to be in Childrenified, and how the episode would be different if they had selected different characters, and if they had selected like a different invading character other than the Ferengi. We'll save that to the second break.
This is exciting.
Yes, you at home, you can think about that, ruminate on that. And then
it's a very rewarding experience.
Eventually, we'll start talking about it.
I hope so. I hope it will be. Something to look forward to in the not too distant future.
This feels wrong somehow.
Well, yes, we'll get to that too. We will be getting to O'Brien. We'll get to the O'Brien and Keiko. Welcome to It's Got Star Trek. Don't forget to check out our Patreon page if you are inclined to give us money or to listen to free previews and just leave it at that. You can go to patreon.com/itsgotstartrek. Last week, we published episode 2 of Jesse's Questions, which is a great new feature we've been coming back to periodically.
And what episode did we do last week?
What you mean, which episode of Star Trek?
Yeah.
We did the animated series,
right.
The Counterclock Incident,
then
a retrospective of all the animated series.
There was one more thing that I wanted to mention about.
I thought you were going to say there was one episode that we forgot to do.
No, we were done with that. No, there's one more thing about that episode is how they.
Lay it on me, Columbo.
How they all concluded the episode by saying, like, we'll just transport them back to normal age again.
Did we vocalize whether or not that was the first time they used the transporter to fix a problem? I think TOS did it. I think they must have done it on TOS.
But I'm thinking, like, if you can just revert anyone's age based upon the signature of their transporter signature, couldn't you revert anyone to any age that they've been, any instance that they've used the transporter? Couldn't you transport them and make them that age?
Yes.
Dan, you are going to get the Star Trek police on your ass. There are certain things you are not supposed to bring up. Certain things are not supposed to be pointed out.
Do not argue with me!
There's a lot of that, not the peewee laugh, there's a lot of that the logic trouble in this episode that we are indeed in the process of getting to discuss. Let me see other stuff, news em ups. A reminder to TNG lovers, which you may be if you're listening to this episode of the podcast. TNG lovers should go check out episode 160 of the Green Shirt podcast, in which I joined them to discuss TNG's Force of Nature. Really good, really fun.
Excellent.
Green Shirt podcast is always great to listen to. Go back, listen to every episode. But if you want to try one out, check out episode 160. See if you like it. You will. And then we already mentioned the fun-em-up. No mail-em-ups this week, or voice mail-em-ups, but if you'd like to send us something, questions, concerns, complaints,
Smail-em-ups.
You can send them to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, and a voicemail can be sent by MP3 or at itsgotstartrek.com/record.
Just so you don't harm my son.
Clever. All right, I think it's all the beginning bit stuff, right?
Well,
do you have beginning bit stuff? Do you have an announcement, Dan?
A personal arena.
Oh, is this a personal arena?
So, like, I was having an issue with ants in my house, and like,
so you just didn't watch the episode.
So I just didn't do shit this week, and I battled ants one by one. No, they went away when it got really hot, but then like it cooled down, and then just my house they came back, a bunch of ants.
The ants came back the very next day.
And normally I would spray with a spray can thing from the line that in which they come, but I couldn't find that line of ants. So I went a step further, or maybe. Maybe the spray would have been the step further. Anyway, went on a different tack. Is that the right word?
You took a different tack. You're tacking into the wind?
Anyways,
that's
an
episode of Star Trek DS9.
I bought some of that tarot, like, ant traps.
Yeah, those work. Great.
Yeah, so, and they say, like, when you put it down, you see more ants at first.
Yeah, because it attracts them.
Yeah, because that means it's working. 15 minutes later, my shit was swarming with ants. It was
like,
kind of...
like a, is there, like, a jelly bean in there?
It was
to clarify, this is just a... it's fine. It's just, this is a personal anecdote. It does not directly relate to...
murdering
is
ants.
There, like, an analogy to Star Trek?
No, I'm just... this is a person... We did this one time.
It was I'm cool with it. Yeah, I'm interested in this topic.
So yeah, because it's basically, I think what it is, it's just sugar with like borax or whatever. Borax.
Because did you talk about your ants in the charger?
Yeah,
on the podcast.
Yeah. In my I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast, maybe, but yeah, not. Like I got my EV charger was acting all crazy, throwing faults. I was like, what's going on? I opened it up and there was just a bunch of ants in there.
So
I cleared them out, and then I looked online and everyone was like, get that tarot stuff or whatever. And when I put it there, they all went away.
Yeah,
within the next day.
So what I was standing there looking at all these ants swarming around. It was a little unsettling, but then I started thinking about what it is I was actually doing. I was genociding like all these ants. Yeah. And it made me finally understand what Picard must have been going through.
Oh my fucking God, I knew this. That's my ass.
When he was trying to decide whether or not to use the computer death virus on the board.
This is a super trick. It's a fucked up evil trick.
I was with
that
it.
That was really... dude,
oh, and it's God. Like, you need
insidious.
To get, you need to get rid of these things, but it feels bad,
okay.
Man.
All right.
You know?
Just a brief explanation for casual fans or new listeners. The more dedicated among you might recall that Dan frequently, somewhat inexplicably, will bring up iBorg. We've never discussed it.
Just stop that!
But he will wedge it in often into an incongruous scenario.
Sorry.
No, it's quite all right.
So we're never going to talk about it ever.
But just laying that out there for the audience who might be confused why Jesse and I freaked out. Oh no, when we discovered what Dan
was
doing. Anyway,
would you rather be playing with dolls?
Okay. That's we're all done with the beginning parts.
I don't know how to answer that question.
We're all good. We can dive right into this. Right into this episode.
And Rascal.
So just to get us started, because there's definitely a tremendous amount that we
Captain
will want
Picard.
To discuss this week. But to get us started, in the past we've talked about how sometimes you start with a certain theme or message. It's very common in storytelling, but particularly in Star Trek. It's like you want to tell a story about the importance of friendship or the importance of being nice or the importance of curiosity. Whatever the theme you might be going at, you have a theme and then you're like, okay, let me craft a plot. Let me develop some characters around this theme. However,
this went the other way.
Very often, there's the reverse, which is where somebody's like, "Wouldn't it be hilarious if Picard was a 12-year-old boy?" And then came up with some sort of plot to try to wrap around.
And didn't it take a while for them to come up with something that everybody could agree on?
Yeah,
like, this was an idea that somebody put out there, and most people were like, "No."
This went through multiple writers.
Yeah, it was a bunch of people writing this shit.
Apparently, Ron Moore thought this was the stupidest idea ever, and he kept refusing. He just didn't want anything to do with it, and it went through a number of writers, and eventually Michael Piller, I guess, assigned it to Ron Moore, saying, like, well, you don't like it, so now you got to take the stab at the final draft. He doesn't even get credit in the writing credits at the end, but he's the one who wrote the final draft, and he said he got the job, so he did it as well as he could, and he was very proud of the row... Laren and Guinan stuff in particular.
Well,
he just thought it was a silly idea.
The Ro Laren stuff was actually like the only sort of like
character development.
Yes, that's exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was the only character development that occurred. She actually used this experience to deal with some childhood trauma. So that like you left coming away with a little more, but just because of the Ro Laren situation.
Yeah.
Which was actually effective therapy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Although it was a little weird at the end, the scene with adult Guinan talking to Ro, and she's all like...
Well, that's the wonderful thing about crayons.
She's like talking to like a 12-year-old like she's 7, and it's actually Ro Laren, who's a full-fledged adult.
Yes.
It was really weird.
It was a little weird.
Ro was the only one that wasn't changed back.
You didn't see her,
You never see her again. Michelle Forbes doesn't come back the whole episode.
Yeah, you're right. She doesn't. But Keiko...
Keiko we don't see either, do we?
We don't see either, but I think it's sort of implied that Keiko...
And you don't see Keiko at all until Deep Space Nine.
I think it was...
O'Brien.
I feel like...
This is actually O'Brien's last episode.
Chief O'Brien?
Or Molly.
I feel like
Miles comes back in a flashback and all good things.
I feel like Keiko, it was implied that she like turned back to normal with everyone else. Yes. And it was implied that Ro was the only one that like stayed yes. longer. So that's yeah. kind of how it ended.
Yeah. There was actually some,
I don't get it.
There was some brief discussion apparently, according to the old behind the scenes tidbits,
ooh.
There was a brief discussion about just letting Ro stay this way and just for the rest, right, yeah, for the rest of the series, just have her played by this young woman. And,
Miles Edward whoops, O'Brien, sorry. I am still your wife.
That was an accident. I'm sorry. My fault.
Dan, we've known Dan for a long time and he's always had a reputation for errant fingers.
Yeah.
Errant Fingers.
They call me Errant Fingers Dan.
That's why he was primarily a trombonist, because you can't have errant fingering if you are a trombonist.
Slide. Right.
Unless you're playing one of those hilarious trombones, which I know are growing in popularity. The trombones that actually have trumpet-like buttons.
No. Yeah. Those, no, fuck those things.
That's the evil.
Yeah.
That's just the evil.
Give me a sack butt any day.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. Look, this episode is charming. It's fun. Everyone remembers it, right?
Is that a Drubidium fructus?
The first part of it is like totally like cool, and you know, it's like it's goofy, but yeah. It's cool.
The first part was like Picard was like basically acting like a kid. He was giddy about like all of his
look
of
at
his
these
choice.
Fragments.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love Picard swooning over some pottery sherds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to play these four sounds and tell me which one is out of order. There's two that are switched. Tell me which two are switched.
They're typical of 2nd century Marlonian cookware.
And I should specify that chronologically, which ones
it
are
almost
switched.
Sounds like you sped that up.
I know, but I didn't.
They're typical of 2nd century Marlonian cookware.
Cookware.
Look at these fragments. They're much closer to Baronian than Taguan. Look at those markings.
Two of those were switched. Do you know which two I switched?
I have no idea.
I'm not entirely clear what you're, asking.
Like chronologically.
This is okay, a super right, brain puzzle.
Okay, thing. So you're saying these are all Picard. Okay. Let me sort this out. In principle, you've got Picard's lines. They occur in a certain order in
right.
the episode.
Yes, perfect.
You have recorded those and stripped out opposing dialogue, the dialogue from other characters, and just taken Picard's lines.
Yeah, and not, I don't even think I took all of his lines. But
well, just a few. Obviously, you didn't take all his lines. You took three lines. And then you've done some sort of three-card Monty with those three lines.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, but we're just supposed to guess based off of our memory of seeing the episode either yesterday or earlier in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a chance.
They're typical of 2nd century Marlonian cookware. Look at these fragments. They're much closer to Baronian than Taguan. Look at those markings.
I say that it's, I want to say it's like it goes number 3, then 2, then 1.
I don't understand how to parse what you just said.
Is it the third clip in order? Is it the third clip and then the second clip and then the first clip? Or is it the second clip and then the third clip and then the first clip? What the fuck are you asking?
Now he answers.
I'm trying to.
I know you are. I know. I'm not. No, it's not your fault, Patrick. It's not your fault.
This is a very problematic game you've come up with.
I feel how you must have felt like a minute ago. Like, I'm just like, what? Jesse, do you have an answer?
Not really.
What's wrong with mine? You were asking which the order.
What's the proper order?
What's the proper order? And I'm assigning numbers to the order that you've played.
Okay,
and I'm trying to say, like, what's the actual order?
Oh, so you're saying the actual order is 3, which is...
They're much closer to Baronian than Taguan.
And then 2?
Look at these fragments.
And then 1?
They're typical of 2nd century Marlonian cookware.
To me, it seems your tone suggests that there's an unexpected order, and so I've picked an unexpected order. Alternatively, my gut says it's like 2, then 3, then 1.
The proper order is 1.
1.
4.
Wait, there's not. You haven't played 4 lines.
Yeah, I did play 4.
What's the 4th line?
Four. Okay, God, this fucks everything up. Okay.
Oh, I thought you played 3.
Okay, 1.
They're typical of 2nd century Marlonian cookware.
2.
Look at these fragments.
3.
They're much closer to Baronian than Taguan.
4.
Look at those markings.
Yeah,
all
4.
Right. Now, I thought the look at those markings was part of 3.
Okay.
That was the error that I made.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm no closer to guessing.
Okay, so I'll just give you the answer. The answer is I switched...
Look at these fragments.
And
look at those markings.
I switched the proper order. The proper order. This is the proper
answer
order.
Is fuck you.
Here's the proper order. One.
They're typical of second century Marlonian cookware.
Two.
Look at those markings.
Three.
They're much closer to Baronian than Taguan.
Four.
Look at these fragments.
So I switched look at these fragments with look at those markings.
I gotcha.
I could do this with another set of sound files, but based on how that went, I think I'm going to call that one a day on that game.
I don't know. I thought I kind of enjoyed that. All right. So, yeah.
He has like some kind of container where like they're all just like rattling around in there.
Yes.
And he has like his hands in there and he has them all out like check out this one and check out this one.
He's the aggravating pseudo-archaeologist that shows up. And all the real archaeologists are like, Jesus, we got to do it. Just toss him some random shirts. Just give this guy a bucket of shirts.
Who tries to solve ancient like mathematical proofs in his coffee during his coffee break?
The correction. He tries to solve already solved,
but not as of air date.
Yes, but not as of air date.
So, what was funny is he was acting all giddy and kid like, and he became a kid in that episode. Yes. And here, this is another line that
I think it's a well written episode. I give Ron Moore credit, and the other people that it's a goofy ass idea, but I think they put it together well.
And this is the other line that I played a second ago with Ro when she out of nowhere goes,
"Is that a Drubidium fructus?"
Like, mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they put that line in there because like Keiko responded like, "I didn't know you knew about this," like implying that was going to come into play later.
Yes, but it confused the fuck out of me.
Yeah, the plants never even came into play really. All the plants did was Beverly was like, "Look, I sped up the growth of these plants to prove that they'll age normally," but that had nothing to do with why Ro said
Beverly's
that.
Beverly's always messing around with plants.
Okay, we'll get to Beverly. We'll get to Beverly in a second, and how this is yet another episode where, thank God for Beverly because everyone would be fucked. She literally had to do everything. But we'll get to that. With the plant thing, that the nearest I could get to guessing what this might be, I mean, I don't know that I'm guessing correct.
Correctly.
Oh, the English police.
Yeah. You'll get less tries next time.
Are you implying that Dan does not carry a firearm? and wears a silly hat?
He's got a silly club, and his name is Bobby.
A silly club?
And he beats people?
It's not a billy club, it's a silly
club? I was in Oxford when I was 16 and going to a camp at the university. And
you're like smoking cigarettes or something?
No, but we were like hanging out in the park, and we got chased by a Bobby, semi-chased by a Bobby on a bicycle. We were in the park after closing, and he was like, "Oi! Park's closed!" And he was like chasing us back, and we were like, "Oh no." We ran out of the park. I mean, that was after you not much of an anecdote.
After you smoked some of your cigarettes, did you have less cigarettes?
I had fewer cigarettes.
You were smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, oddly enough, the locals didn't call them cigarettes.
I wonder what they called them.
Because there's
less an amount of them.
Was his name Leslie Cigarettes?
He went by the nickname
Less Cigarettes.
Less.
Leslie Cigarettes.
You can call me Less.
Was one cigarette more gooder than the other?
Why are you doing this to us and to everyone at home?
Okay.
Everyone at home.
The plant.
Okay,
thing.
Let's do it.
Yes. I was thinking that they put that there because I was similarly.
You got similarly pronounced perfectly.
Similarly,
you pronounced that perfectly. You were on a roll and then you fucked it up with an easy one.
I was similarly.
Similarly, pop, 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 pop. Puffin' stuff.
Similarly puzzled.
That's amazing.
Similarly puzzled by. By the fact, Jesse's
lunch. Is everyone all right?
No, Jesse's lunching out over there. I was similarly puzzled by the fact that
this podcast has been too much already. It's only been 22 minutes.
Yeah, that's too much, man.
We're almost up on a break, and then we can do our second break fun 'em up. But first, I have to describe how I was similarly puzzled.
Hazardous.
By Ro Laren's odd look. Like, she looked guilty, and it looked like she was trying to hide the fact that she was a nerd about plants.
Right.
Like, she thought it was uncool to admit that she was into plants, even though Keiko O'Brien is a botanist.
Yeah, right. She was in good company.
If you're going to talk to anybody about plants, it's, come on.
Look at the way she says it.
Is that a Drubidium fructus?
Like, Drubidium fructus?
She's like, into it?
Yeah.
She's like, into it.
Is that a Drubidium fructus?
Yeah. She's like super all about it. Mm-hmm. And then pretends that she's not. So my assumption,
we had those at the refugee.
My assumption is that's what they were trying to demonstrate, is that Rolaren,
I was in a refugee camp.
Yeah, is uptight, is uptight, and has some like weird psychological thing about like not wanting to seem like a nerd. But I don't
know, because she's used to being a freedom fighter.
But I don't know exactly how that connects to the rest of the plot. Right. So I think maybe they were. They figured it connected in a better way, and it's just not as obvious or not as smooth a connection. Or maybe there's some scene that got left on the cutting room floor that's like later she's like, you're right, Keiko. I'm all about those plants.
Well, the exchange between Keiko and Ro lasted all of like 5 to 10 seconds. Yeah, so
it was weird.
They could have cut that too.
Ensign Ro is the only person that has like the uniform headband, right?
I think so, yeah.
That's her thing.
That's her thing.
Yeah. That's her thing. That's her thing.
No, it totally works. I'm just saying, like, she's the only one that has pulled that off.
Well, then the Ferengi and Onag gets the backwards, not a headband, like a head flap to cover up the fact that they don't have the full Ferengi head.
Ferengis, like, they do a good job of making Ferengi sound consistent, like, when they talk. Yeah. They all have the same sort of sound.
But they also sound different, and they look different. I think that the production design's really, really great. These actors, by the way, the Ferengi actors had all played.
Yes.
They'd all played previous different Ferengi on different episodes.
It worked. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
They knew how to do
yes. it. Yes. It will be highly profitable.
Yes.
They were totally Ferengi, that's for sure.
Well, and this was I was just going to say, this was that weird part where it was they were filming Deep Space Nine at this stage, but it hadn't aired yet. Right?
What the devil?
Deep Space Nine aired it.
This is like Alexander's finest moment.
Oh no, Alexander, Worf's unloved son.
That fucking weird ass toy. Look, that was the weirdest toy.
You mean the remote control car? Look, we'll get to that. This aired on November 2nd, 1992.
It had like some kind of comm badge.
And Deep Space Nine started airing in January. I bring that up because of the depiction of the Ferengi. We're in transition from the Ferengi being evil, slithery, slimy, foolish people to a more nuanced group of people.
Right. Yeah, they all like.
But these were all evil, slithery, slimy.
Yeah, they were still, but they were like, but we're not part of the Alliance. Yeah, right, you know, they were still sort of like, we're TNG style.
They used to stand like, if you ever played Mortal Kombat, that reptile character, they would like all just kind of like squirm about and like hunker and like go.
And Damon Lurin was particularly like hunchy and weird, at least at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, it was fucked up because like Ro was all like, if they're typical Ferengi, if they're typical Ferengi, they'll be all proud of themselves by now. I was like, that's kind of a shady thing to say about.
Well, they're always racist against the Ferengi.
Yeah, but the funny thing is you
like
go to
DJ's Night,
but like the very next scene, it's Lauren at the fucking Picard's chair. He puts his feet up, and he is very pleased with himself.
He's pleased with himself.
What is the deal with him and the fish? Like what? Like he's never seen like a I think aquarium
he wanted
before.
I think he wanted to eat.
He wanted to eat it.
Yeah, because he's a Ferengi. They eat weird things.
That's kind of the vibe I got. I just wasn't.
It was a very rewarding experience.
But why couldn't he figure out how to get into it already? Like,
do you know how to get into that thing?
Just go around the back.
There is no back.
Come on.
Where's the outside the ship?
You just go up top somewhere. There's got to be a hatch.
I mean, there was a box.
I'm sure it slides out. I'm sure the whole unit slides out because you got to feed the fish.
But they were
somehow
trying to imply that they transported them in there or something.
That's crazy. How do you feed the fish? Does the computer
feed them? You transport food into
it. What are you talking
with the replicator
about?
Everyone's just like always transporting.
Oh, you think
ship.
They're taking the time to actually feed the fish? I'm sure the computer like replicates it on a schedule.
I think the whole point is that you're supposed to open the thing and then it all smells all fishy for a little bit.
That's
and then
why you have
sprinkle
a fish.
You sprinkle some of that gross fish food in. And
it's
you're
like a zen activity.
Yeah. Keep it alive.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
What I do know, I'll tell you what
I don't know.
I do know that I was about 12 years old when this first aired.
Okay. And that's how old they're supposed to be.
And that's how old they're supposed to be. I do remember distinctly how, because I watched Star Trek at this point. I started watching TNG, I think, in the third season, partway through the
Picard
third season.
The Picard guy is like a little bit older than me.
Yeah, well, he was 15 at the time when he filmed this. So even though he's playing 12, he was 15 in real life.
Which guy?
The actor who played
his name is something something something. He's got three names.
What are you talking about?
Dirk Gently's holistic. David Tristan Birkin.
He's like an artist now.
Wait.
Who played young Picard?
Young Picard. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
Okay. Audience at home, Dan's got a look on his face that suggests there's something afoot.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Saying something incomprehensible, which means that he is totally effing with us.
He's gonna play a sound. Or do some weird thing.
I'm just trying to understand what you're talking about.
Talking about is the actor who played.
He was in Dirk Gently. He was Dirk Gently.
No, he was not Dirk Gently.
I thought you said it's Dirk Gently.
No, I couldn't remember his name,
Was he been in anything else?
He's been in.
He was in the other episode of.
He was in Family. He played Rene Picard.
He was the nephew.
In season four, he played Picard's nephew, Rene Picard.
Who?
Who? So that's David Tristan Birkin.
Yes, David Tristan Birkin
as young Picard. And why were we bringing him up? We were just complimenting him or saying something about him. Oh yeah, he was. Oh, I was saying I was 12. He was 15. But I was 12 when I watched it.
Not sure.
I remembered thinking how cute and charming it was. It was like, oh, these characters are like my age. Yeah.
So, but he's supposed to be 12 in the episode.
Yes,
because he threw that fucking temper tantrum.
Well, yeah, because he's just...
Well, he was pretending.
He was just pretending.
I know, but like...
With a Ferengi.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the Ferengi don't know that, like...
And neither does Picard.
Ferengi didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Picard has no idea how a fucking 12-year-old acts.
Even if you're 12, you're probably... probably
even 12-year-old Picard.
I need to see my father.
When Picard was 12, like, his mom...
I need to see him right now.
His mom was
I need
like,
to see him now.
Hey,
I want my father! Stop it, you hurt me! I want my father!
Hey, Dan,
let me go!
We gotta take a break. Do you know when we have to take a break?
Now!
Okay, we will be right back.
And we are back.
All right. Okay, we're back.
Welcome back.
So,
Patrick.
Thanks, Jesse.
We appreciate it.
You are welcome.
Did the heavy lifting and you brought us back.
Here we are.
For folks who don't know, and Dan, we'll let you continue in just a second, but for folks who don't know, during the break, we all sort of go to a strange liminal space.
I went over there.
You could call it meditation, but it's not. It's Mm-mm. something real. It's a real sort of interdimensional weirdness. Dan's just like, Dan thinks he's opening that can.
It's like the...
I tried. I'm sorry.
The ethereal plane.
We're like on the ethereal plane, and Dan's just like,
I should be staring daggers at you.
If I open this can slowly,
it won't just go.
Let me tell you, friend.
It didn't make it softer, it just made it last longer.
Yes, it's like,
okay, I won't try that again.
Dr. Pepper Dan.
Okay, anyway, we're back. We're out of the ethereal plane. We are no longer occupying the liminal space.
Somehow I stuck a soda in there that we
live in.
Dr. Pepper, during cream the breaks. Soda, zero sugar.
Our consciousnesses have returned to our bodies. Dan, you were about to say something.
I was just saying, when Picard like threw this temper tantrum. We can say, like, yeah, the Ferengi have no idea, like, what a 12-year-old really acts like. But that's seriously, when was the last time, like a 12-year-old kid threw a temper tantrum? Like, that's way off base.
I don't know, man.
There's some age issues. They don't really portray kids that accurately in Star Trek. First of all, we'll talk about upon a time in Voyager, we talked about how, Naomi was supposed to be 5, but she looked like she was, like, 9 or 10. In this episode, like, they're supposed to be 12, but Guinan's talking down to Ro, who's actually an adult, but she's talking down to her like she's 6.
Guinan talks down to everybody.
And then Picard is a kid. Throws a temper tantrum like he's like 5 or 6 years old. Like everything below like age 15, they just like it's all over the place with how kids act.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, people, 12-year-olds wouldn't really act that way.
I need to see my father. I need to see him right now. I need to see my father. I need to see him right now.
Well, that's a beating.
wait, you mean he deserves a beating, or you think it's a musical beat?
I need to see my father.
Because I'm going
to
go.
I need to see him right now. I need to see my father. I need to see him right now.
That's a beat.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right.
It's a beat.
That's a good beat. No, if you just add a do, do, do.
I mean, I really wish you would.
Mommy! 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 He's my number one dad.
Mommy.
I played that.
That's not bad.
Yeah, we need to bring in a little keyboard or something so you can push some buttons. Jesse can like.
Yeah.
There used to be one right over there.
There still is, but it's a big giant one, and it's like I don't know. I don't have a long enough cable. We should get a little one. Get a little beatbox. Mm-hmm. Get like one of those crazy machines that the youth are using, like Mark Ribolette and those types.
Or those things you got us. What do you call them?
Those
melodicas.
Oh, the melodicas.
Oh, word up.
Make it so.
Those are really cool, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a fun thing to fiddle with.
Yeah, those are pretty tight.
Well, another fun thing to fiddle with is the reality of already written television shows.
Whoa, dude.
That was fucking intense.
Oh,
was
snap.
That meant to be? It's just meant to introduce us
to you.
Into our second break, Fun 'Em Up, which I referred to at the beginning of tonight's episode, alternate child transformation selections.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the first thing I wanted to ask was, what do you think was the reasoning? And I know we're just guessing. We're just speculating, having fun. We don't know.
Speculating.
What was the reasoning for why they picked the characters they picked to get enchildified?
Keiko, Roe, Guinan. I thought the actor who played Kid Guinan did a really good job of like sounding like Guinan.
She was great. Yeah. Although I noticed there
I
was a lot
she
of
was overdubbed.
There was a lot of ADR, but I think it was the same actor who did that. Isis Jones. She actually played young Whoopi Goldberg in Sister Act.
Sister
Act.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, in the same year.
Okay,
yeah.
I guess
they used somebody different for the voice.
Did they? Because I couldn't confirm whether they used somebody.
That's what sometimes it looks a little funny.
It was clearly overdubbed, and I couldn't immediately find whether it was a different person or if it was just because the audio on the day was.
Did Sister Act come out before this?
It was the same year.
I don't know.
It might have been around the same time.
Sister Act 1 or 2.
I bet she got the first. I bet she got the gig for one from doing the other. Because they were like, you do a really good job as Whoopi.
Yes, I think that's probably how it went.
And then
down.
Picard. Okay, so why do they choose that? Well, Picard is obvious because why not? Because
Picard is the funniest one.
Because
he may be the second funniest
because
one.
Because you get that relationship with Riker.
I
have a proposal for who's the funniest one, but I'll save that.
Ro is like the feisty Bajoran, and they're always like, our youth was stolen from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that one actually had some, like we were saying earlier, character development. Yeah. There was some
pathos.
Guinan's like a 1,000 years old, so maybe that there's some kind of
Guinan is the only one that like is embracing childhood, and it's actually interesting her approach to solving problems is like, we're kids, let's act like kids, like, you know, so they like try to like distract the Ferengi by acting like bratty kids or whatever. And even with the computer, Picard's like, I'll try to talk to the computer like it's a normal computer, and she's like, this is a kid's computer. Yeah. You gotta talk to it like you're a kid.
Yeah. Do you know how to spell Enterprise?
Guinan was so wise that she was able to act like a kid better than like the other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that made sense. Keiko was just so O'Brien could feel weird.
I was gonna say, yeah, I was like, is that why? Because okay, this is a, you know, even though we're still in our fun 'em up, you know, we do need to mention that was, it's a very awkward, but it is an awkward scene between O'Brien and Keiko.
That's one of the,
this feels wrong somehow.
That's like one of like the critically acclaimed parts of this episode was like that scene.
Well, because it's from a
Miles Edward O'Brien.
From a sci-fi perspective, it is such an interesting concept. It's almost like you could see this be a whole Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
Where your partner becomes a young child, but not mentally, right? It's like, what's going on there?
I don't know.
It also fits into
so she can still totally sass you.
Yeah, and grab him by his collar, by the scruff.
Yeah,
he literally gets grabbed by the scruff of his neck. I mean, that's what, I wasn't a huge fan of that, because they're like, why do they always portray Keiko as being some sort of like,
I know,
some shrew.
I know,
some,
and
evil,
it was so
shrew.
And it was so accentuated because she was a kid, and like, I don't know, something about it, it's like they went out of their way to like embrace like people's public opinion of her character or something.
But it does, you know, it does also fit in with O'Brien, with Miles O'Brien getting being, you know, always have being shit
Miles
on.
Like,
he's always got to have like he's just got to have the shit terrible stuff happens to him.
And he was being all lame with her too. Like he was like, I take my coffee double sweet. She didn't know. It's like, come on. And then he was like, careful, it's hot. Like I know he's supposed to express that he's supposed to think that he's thinking of her like a kid. But they did this several times where Riker at one point was talking to Picard, and he's like, Picard, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, sir. You know, he like sneaks in that sir. And Data does it too. Data's he's like, Captain, blah, 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 blah.
And Worf just has that funny face. And just like O'Brien has like a couple of funny faces, like Because O'Brien sees them first when they come out of the transport. Mm-hmm. He just has that look like he's just like,
and it's, and
he's about to throw up.
If you see your partner who has been potentially irrevocably mutated into a dreadful form, and then she's all like hugging up on him, and he's like, ugh.
Yeah. This was the Riker line was the shuttle broke up.
Why was he letting her drink coffee?
The Riker line was, the shuttle broke up just after we beamed you out. Mr. Data is coordinating the salvage efforts now. Then he goes, pauses and goes, sir. As in, like, he forgot that, like, he's a sir. And Data says, Picard goes, have you secured all the shuttle debris? And Data goes, almost. It is being stored in Shuttle Bay 2. Sir. Like, why would Data do that? Why would Data have that issue?
I know, right?
Like, why would Data forget? Data shouldn't matter.
It's exactly, ridiculous. Yeah.
I mean, unless he's so smart that, like, he forgot how to do, like, he's so human. Yeah. Maybe that represents a human he's come. No, it was just putting their
butt. I know, yeah.
But, like, those two lines were meant to be like, well, they're having trouble acclimating to them as children, just like O'Brien was having trouble acclimating to the fact that Keiko was a child, so he, like, warned her about how hot the coffee was. He reminded her of, but it's like, I know what you're trying to say, but it's a little over the top because it's like, come on. I can understand him being weirded out by her wanting to cuddle. I can get that.
Yeah.
But like him like warning her that the coffee's hot.
Right,
is like,
I know.
But
like,
at the same time,
she couldn't get it out of the replicator.
Yeah,
at the same time, I did really feel bad for Keiko because I was like, she obviously needs comforting because she's not handling, you know, that's how she's reacting to it. I wasn't going to say she's not handling it well. It's just like she's
the girl's all like, you're not my mom.
Yeah, exactly.
That's mommy. F'd up.
Keiko looked really sad. Oh, yeah. That was upsetting.
And this is the first appearance of Hannah Hatte, who played Molly later on Deep Space Nine. So I'm very sympathetic to Keiko, young Keiko in this scene, who is looking for comfort and solace and is skeeving her husband out in the process. But, okay, so we've come up with some good justifications for the people they picked.
Are we still doing Fun-Em-Up?
This is still Fun-Em-Up, because now that we've discussed why we think they picked the people they picked...
Because they're on the rad.
Yes. What would be different if they picked some of these other people? So, for example,
the Fun-Em-Up really begins.
What if Riker... What if Riker?
You could do a Riker.
Riker was a baby Riker.
But Riker would
What do you think 12-year-old Alaskan Riker would be
He would
like?
Try to like step over a chair to sit in it and he'd like fall down because he's not tall enough.
Or if he like hurt his nuts.
Yeah,
he like put his leg up. He's like, ow, my fucking nuts. I'm not tall enough. Although Riker might have been that tall, like at 12, he might have been one of those people who's just like already 6 feet tall.
A little side about Riker. About halfway through the episode, Riker asks Data for more news about the science team, and he goes up to Data's console and he puts his foot on something so he can rest his arm on his.
I think
leg.
They got little edges.
Where did I don't know where he put his foot? Like it wasn't on Data's console.
A stool just replicates.
Yeah,
out
there for Riker. Yeah. And then part two is he went to sit in a chair to tell Morta, I guess, about the Heisenfram Morta Heisenfram Slamabam.
Oh yeah,
right.
And the Fizbin sequence.
And when he sits in the chair, he steps over it and like does a Riker.
Yeah,
two Riker moves. Yeah. And did you notice that when Jean-Luc Picard
Jean-Luc Pickard?
When he goes like he
Picker,
goes
Picker.
I can't remember. There's a couple lines where he declares himself Jean-Luc Picard, but he's like
he says Picard.
I am still Jean-Luc Picard.
And he like tugs on his, he tugs on the
pull down.
He does the pull down. They did that on purpose.
That's because Jerk Dentley Bean Man.
He was really
he
good.
Did a really good. He did a very good
that
job.
Guy, that guy was.
I assure you, I am Captain Picard.
All right, now
T. Earl Grey.
He calls himself Picard.
Yeah, in that one time. Now
I am still Jean-Luc Picard. I assure you, I am Captain Picard.
See, it's different.
You want to know another different one?
Yeah, I do want to know.
No.
I do want to know another different one.
No.
This is a little off topic, but here's another one.
Tarkasian Razor Beast.
First of all, Guinan is obsessed with these razor beasts.
Tarkasian Razor Beast.
I pulled a...
Capellan Power Cat.
Capellan Power Cat. Capellan Power Cat.
I was listening to
Capellan Power Cat. But then I pulled... So this is young Guinan.
Tarkasian Razor Beast.
I pulled from an old episode of regular age Guinan.
The Tarkasian Razor Beast.
See? Mm-hmm.
Tarkasian Razor Beast.
The Tarkasian Razor Beast.
Different pronunciations.
Which episode was that from?
I don't even know.
Was that Q-Who or something like that?
Woo woo.
I really have no idea which episode that was from. I didn't mark it on the I didn't start marking what episodes these sounds were from until recently. So
the rascal is you.
I have them.
You are the rascal.
I have them organized. I have the sounds organized by show in directories, but the file name doesn't actually have the tag in it until recently. So I can figure it out, but I just not.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back and relabel them.
I've actually kind of been doing that a bit.
You could hire power cat. You could hire somebody to help you out too, or get an intern. If anybody, if anybody's listening and wants to be a free intern,
Star Trek,
intern. Write us a feedback at scottstartrek.com.
They can live in your house in that spare room.
Yeah,
you get no college credit.
No college credit. You can get one free soda a day from Dan's soda pile
from his closet.
You can have my Pepsi Zeros.
You can have my gross ass horrible drink. All right,
tell him Power Cat.
Keep moving down the list. What about a 12-year-old Worf? What if we had a 12-year-old Worf wandering around?
I hope he'd be a right sight better than Alexander.
Well, do you think he'd get into a fight with that? Do you think he'd kick the shit out of Alexander? Like when they got put in there, where the first thing he'd do is be like, "I must teach you how to be a proper Klingon child."
It's a fair fight now. He would beat the shit out of Alexander.
But like, okay, 12-year-old Worf in real life, wasn't he raised on Earth?
Well, he was. Yeah, precisely.
So we don't, I mean, maybe he was an odd fellow.
Well, he killed somebody at some point, right? When he was playing soccer, I think, didn't he? Like,
you got to.
Klingon soccer?
Human soccer.
No, it was on Earth. It was one of the reasons why Worf becomes all like stodgy is because he headbutted a kid or something. I forget what it was. He accidentally like fucked up a kid or hurt kid. And so he became a little bit reserved. But who knows? I don't know what angle they would take with him other than it would be funny to see him interacting with Alexander. I think there'd be some opportunities there.
Young Jordan.
It was a long, depressing period of my life, and I was grateful when it was finally over.
I mean, that is really upsetting when you think of the reality of her living in refugee and concentration camps.
Man. I was in a refugee camp.
Being on the run from a fascist, murderous lizard people who are just destroying their world. Young Jordy.
Just a crazy idea.
Young Jordy, I think you
sabotage.
I did say that.
With Worf, you mentioned it briefly with Worf, how he looked at... He looked to Riker to get he was checking with Riker to make sure it was okay to like talk to Captain Picard as if he was the captain.
Yeah.
He was like, "Is this cool?" And Riker was like, "Yeah, it's cool." And then Picard had to do that fucking walk of shame out of his office after he talked to Beverly because he's like,
"I'm going to my room now."
Yeah, right. He's like throwing orders and everyone's all weirded out. And
he
then
was reading some book and looking at a microscope.
And then like he's like everyone's weirded out that he's on the bridge like throwing orders all around. And then Beverly takes him aside. And then 5 minutes later he comes out and he's like. I'm going to take a leave of absence. It's like very obvious what happened in that room. And so it's just like, you'd think though he would like...
The room where it happened.
It doesn't make sense that he's so obsessed with continuing to be a captain because he's not like on the bridge 20...
Listen.
First, here's my point. Before you judge
I'm not judging your point.
No, before you judge...
I may have an alternate perspective.
Okay, but before you present that alternate perspective, let me back up my assertion first.
Back that ass up.
I can say
beep, beep,
I can say
beep.
I can say all sorts of crazy shit, but if I don't get a chance to back it
as
up,
as you often have.
If I don't get a chance to back it, this it's I don't know. I was trying to back up my assertion about backing up statements, and you didn't let me back up that assertion that I was backing up about assertion statements. It's like a meta thing.
Yeah, because it's a little backup thing.
Yeah, so I think it's Picard is like not on the bridge 24/7, obviously. He takes time off. Yeah. I don't think
he's
would be.
Look at his fish.
I don't think it would be that far fetched for him to be like. I think I'm going to take it easy for a day or two because it's not like he's on the bridge. If he was on the bridge 24 hours a day, if this was all about we're all robot people that can live that don't need sleep, and I'm on the bridge 24 hours a day, then yes, it would be weird for him to take time off. But he already takes time off.
He does like Dixon Hill.
What's wrong with taking a day or two off? I know it's his. I know he's like prideful and shit, but like. Come on.
I totally agree with you. I'm in zero disagreement. I simultaneously also can understand why somebody who they're making it clear that the mental faculties are identical to their everyday selves, right? Mm-hmm. And under that context, I'm not surprised that a type A commander person their immediate default without thinking it through thing is like, yeah, I'll just, you know, I'll keep doing it.
And they were fixing to do a mission.
Especially
already.
Since this had just happened like an hour ago. Yeah. And it hadn't, like, I think what he needed was, like, look, you're right.
They had to check out LIGO 7.
Maybe it would be, maybe he shouldn't have needed Beverly to fucking point the shit out to him, but he kind of needed, it seems, they've played it as he needed Beverly to come in and be like, look, Jean-Luc, this is one of those crazy ass situations that we get into from time to time. Maybe just pull back a little bit.
I understand the point you're making, how it maybe not, it hasn't clicked yet, but like if he woke up and he was barfing everywhere, he'd probably take some time
if he was, but he's not. He feels fine. He probably feels great. Look, Picard is loving rubbing his hand.
Yeah, he did. Hair. He rubbed his
hair.
He's
probably feeling good. I think the only thing he's not feeling good about is his little tiny boy penis.
Oh no.
Other than that, he's probably like, everything's rocking.
But Captain, it's like hard all the time. I need to run some additional tests.
So
it's little boy penis. Yeah,
what? But it's like all, well, you know, it gets all pointy at weird times.
Yeah, I know, right? That's a pain in the ass. That could impact command.
This feels wrong somehow.
You know? Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you could, the impact of unwanted erections during
just stop that.
Any during, sort of like
initiate intruder alert
during gym class or something. Can you imagine wearing one of those Starfleet uniforms?
Hazardous.
And you're trying to give commands to Worf and other people, and you're like,
who's this little guy?
Anyway, I agree with you that it'd probably make more sense for Picard to have enough sense on his own to be like, yeah, this is an odd situation. But it also kind of, it's a borderline enough that it doesn't surprise me, because it's not like he fights it. Mm-hmm. He listens to Beverly and he's like, you know what? You're fucking right.
Hazardous. Very.
Okay. Hazardous. Speaking of Beverly, what if
did you notice at the end he rubbed his ball? He rubbed his head at the end.
Rubbed his balls. Oh yeah, rubbed his bald head. Yes, I got you.
I didn't want to say bald head because that felt weird to say.
There's nothing wrong with a bald head. Heads are sexy.
No, I know. There's nothing. Of course, there's nothing wrong with bald head. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. It's just a casually.
Nobody
said no. He rubbed his bald head. It just seems.
He rubbed his fucking bald head.
It just feels disrespectful somehow.
Yeah, bald heads look kind of like penises.
He rubbed his head when he had no hair. He was noticing how he had hair before and didn't.
He was lamenting the loss of his hair,
or he was just noticing the difference
in the cutscene. Or maybe it was relieved. Cutscene, he puts his hand down his pants and then he smiles. Then he like has a wry smile because he just grabs his junk.
Maybe he was
just like, yeah.
Maybe he was relieved by his
captain's hog.
Maybe he was. God damn it.
God. I'm sorry, this is really funny.
This is getting absurd.
Nobody said Captain's Hog.
I know.
It's really funny.
I know. It's just so chaotic.
Anyway, we're still not done with this game, so.
Yeah, I'm trying to say another one of those 5-second statements that somehow has been stretched to five minutes, more like 5 years.
Maybe 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
I was almost guilty of my own issue. That issue of me not liking it when someone says five. This number of minutes, this more like this number of years. Anyway,
one of Dan's pet peeves.
Maybe he was, when he rubbed his head and it didn't have any hair, he wasn't lamenting. He was relieved to know that I'm back to normal again.
I think he was lamenting, but in a charming way, you know, in that sort of like,
do not argue with me.
Okay, I won't. I'm sorry. But speaking of Beverly, what about a young Beverly? What if we had a 12-year-old Beverly?
She would be
up in
dancing
the mix?
Up a storm.
You think so? Tap dancing or waltzing?
No, because her brain
wasn't
would...
she a ballet dancer?
No, her brain would still be as an adult brain, so she would probably still be ashamed of her dancing. Because isn't she ashamed of being a dancing doctor?
I have no idea. What
I
don't. You're
about. There was an episode where she was like, "I don't want it to get out because I was known as the dancing doctor."
I do remember that, but everyone knows that she dances. That's why Data goes to her to get dancing lessons in the first place. Wasn't that in Data's day or something like that when he was trying to learn how to dance?
Maybe she might dance more because maybe she'd feel more limber or something because she's like a kid again, and so she'd be like, "I can dance better than I or something."
What about Data?
Oh yeah, Data was the one I was going to ask. For me, Data's he's the funniest one because it's like, would he get a small little Data body?
would he have
like a regular sized Data head?
There's like
what would his wiener be like? Would he still have a wiener?
Well, I don't know because like
he's fully functional.
Yeah, but would he still be fully functional?
Well, would he? But yeah, but still. I think Data's like 30 or 35 years old or something like this. Like in terms of like when he was turned on or something like that. I forget the exact
turned on. Details. I'll turn you on.
But it's would he have the same body? And like obviously they're all keeping their same minds, but what if his circuitry was like reverted differently? Would it affect him differently? Or would he have like a funny, would the writers have to come up with an even more ridiculous made up nonsense than they did, which was like RVN or whatever they made, was they made up some made up shit.
Oh, about why they turned into kids?
Yeah. Like, would that apply to Data as well? Because it was some sort of molecular
astronomy. Okay. So, So the ship fell apart because it was in some reversion field that made the it go back into its
molecular reversion field.
It was in the reversion field that made it go back into its like constituent parts or whatever, which is why it fell apart.
Constituent parts. They said like constituent elements.
Elements, whatever, yes. Whatever.
Same thing.
So they were in the reversion field. Way. It fell apart because it was like, it reverted the fucking, so it reverted the ship, but it reverted the people for a different reason. The ship got reverted because they were in a reversion shield, but the people got reverted because the reversion field was blocking some of the transporter's ability to transport the magical molecules. So isn't that interesting?
The ship reverted, and
the people reverted for two totally separate reasons, but it happened at the same time.
What if they had gotten caught in a pre-version field?
Oh, no.
And they'd all turned into preverts.
This feels wrong somehow.
I guess that's a new favorite, right? Yeah. All right. We didn't talk about Deanna. I mean, young Deanna, that could be fun too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's much to say about that. But I did want to, at least briefly, before we conclude this fun em up, touch on what if instead of the Ferengi,
Ferenginar,
it was a different antagonistic group of people who attacked the ship. Because when you look at
they would have done a better job.
Well, when you look at the behind the scenes stuff, they talked about the reason that they picked the Ferengi is they were like, who's going to believe that kids could defeat the Romulans?
Yeah, right,
but
right.
You know, you buy that they could fool a bunch of Ferengi, right?
I know the Ferengi made Daddy turn off the main computer.
Funny, they're still so funny weird. Little guys in like funny little suits.
I just like the idea of Riker like talking about daddies.
Yeah, I know.
But what about the Cardassians?
So, son, how are you?
That could have happened.
The Cardassians, I think, would be pretty hard to fool because they're pretty like sneaky and ruthless, but they're also arrogant. So they still have like a mechanism for like. There's always a mechanism for like a weakness to exploit, right?
The thing about this is like the Ferengi. Took over, how many Ferengi were there? Like 10?
It was not a lot, and they only had a couple of old, I think they had old busted up
Klingon. There's like 1,000. They even make a point of saying that there's 1,000 people on the Enterprise.
Yeah, who don't really show much resistance.
And so like, okay, like, I guess maybe the idea is that the shit was that fucked up by the surprise attack that like everybody was in shambles and they couldn't, but you could still like, all you had to do was pull together like 20 crewmen with like some phaser rifles.
Yeah, I think there was like some, 7 or 8 Ferengi or something.
This was a very hand wavy episode.
Just get some from, you know, like they didn't even have like that great of like a any kind of security. They had the Ferengi were out there like here and there like so on the ship.
It was
like,
it was an implausible scenario for the Enterprise to get taken over.
The whole part where they were tricking the Ferengi. Okay, so Picard and Keiko distracted that one Ferengi with Alexander's toy, which like had a comm badge on it for some reason. And it, like,
well, because they were using the comm badges to tag them beam them away.
Right, but it was I swear that when it ran into his foot, the comm badge was facing the screen, so maybe there was one on either side.
It was close enough, I guess.
Anyways, but it was funny that.
Again, his hand wave.
Everyone had all these intricate like ways, not super intricate, but like they did all this sneaky stuff, except for Alexander, who like tricked Barrick. By the way, but they do all these complicated plots and things, and then Alexander walks up, taps on the window, runs out of the room, and then comes in through the other door, and Barrick's just gone. And what's funny is at the beginning of the episode, and I believe these are the same two Ferengi, it's Barrick says to Morta, he says, "We have secured the ship, Daemon, but Morta's incompetence has denied us access to ... He's like, my incompetence? And so, but it was Barrick, I believe, who was the one that got tricked by the dumbest fucking trick. He got tricked by the dumbest trick, which is a dumb sentence. But that's the one who was calling the other dude incompetent was the one who was the most incompetent in the trickery scene.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, this is something you'll see often in many office environments.
And so and then when Guinan and Ro like do the tag you're it, which was kind of funny that they were like tag you're it because suddenly they're embracing
it was like a kick me sign on their back.
Yeah, suddenly they're embracing their childhood.
They should have also just kicked them in the butt.
Since they didn't have to say tag you're it, but they were being a kid because they thought it was fun, which was kind of weird.
Or ostensibly they would be easier to fool like, you know, you get a couple extra seconds of them not thinking they're under threat because they're just like, oh, those crazy kids.
Yeah,
they're being such crazy, goofy little kids.
And so they beamed him away by doing that trickery. But then Alexander just walks up to Barrick again. It's just like, hey, I think this is yours. And he takes it and he grabs it and goes away. And I love as he's beaming away, Alexander just says his big smile on his face.
Like, dude, you're stupid.
Alexander's finest moment.
Yeah, it really was. I was really like pleased with Alexander.
It was pretty good.
That episode.
What about just some other, what about Klingons, Romulans, the Borg? Who do you think would be the ones that would defeat the kids the best?
Klingons.
The Borg. The Borg. You can't trick the Borg.
I think the Borg would be, because the Cardassians, they'll be arrogant, so you can trick them somehow. The Klingons, you can get into some like argument about like logic or something.
Or I think Klingons, you could trick them into being violent to each other or something like that.
Well, same thing with the Romulans. You could probably turn them against each other with some sort of like scheming or something.
What about the Gorn?
Would the Gorn just like rip everyone to shreds?
I mean, that's kind of like
the
Gorn level.
Just enslave everybody.
He's my number one.
What is that? What did you just say?
The Gorn attacking.
No,
Picard.
But what was that phrase you just said?
I said he's my number one. You know, like it's.
I'm not familiar with that line.
All right.
Dad.
That line?
Yes, that line exactly. Dan. That's right. Oh yeah, you haven't even said it this episode.
Said what?
All right. For the audience at home, it's one of Dan's favorite things to say. It's one of the reasons why we're doing this episode tonight, because Dan loves saying he's my number one dad and doing it in a very dramatic fashion.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He's been saying it for years.
It was a hit part of our podcast.
Yeah, for years now.
People love it.
The Borg and the Gorn are...
He's just not going to give it to
the
you.
The Borg and the
he's
Gorn...
He's going to save it to the end,
Borg,
is my bet.
The Borg and the Gorn are similar in that they're sort of treated like monsters, creatures. What about the fucking shapeshifters? What the fuck is their name? Not the collective. The fuck, that's the Borg. The pool people, the swimming pool people,
the continuum,
the founders. I can't believe
they run the Dominion.
What if it was the founders versus the founders are
the
smart?
Joining, that's what it's called.
The founders are smart and they can change shape.
But
and
the GUI continuum. You can use them like force fields. What about like a bunch of Armises?
Do you think you could use
like the oil slick guy?
Do you think you could use
the one that get the guy that
but like a bunch of
now, do you think you could use nitroglycerin on the founders to break them into a million pieces?
It might just make them go super fast.
Okay.
All right. Enough of that. We got to take a break.
Okay.
So we did enough of that business, and we'll take a quick break. And when we return, we will conclude our discussion of number one dad, and we will hope Dan will give us a little taste of it somewhere along.
I honestly don't know what you're talking about.
We'll be right back.
Thanks, number one.
Okay, we're back.
He's my number one dad. He's my number one dad. He's my number one dad. He's my number one dad.
Okay.
He's my number one dad.
He's one of those, be careful.
He's my number one dad.
Be careful what you wish for kind of deals.
He's my number one dad.
Yep. He's my number one dad.
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 Dad. Thanks, number one.
He's my number one dad.
He's my number one dad.
He's my number one dad.
Yeah, you've been saying it for so long. And
he's
so,
my number one dad.
And you've amped it up so much.
I know.
I was watching the episode, I was like, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know, I was too. I was like,
play it again.
He's my number one dad.
I was surprised too, because in my mind it was, he's my number one dad.
It's a classic illustration of
it's the Dana Carvey effect.
Well, partly, but it's also that a good illustration of how every time you access a memory, you are affecting that memory.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you want to save your memories, don't fucking remember them.
Yep.
Because like every time you remember them, you rewrite it in some stupid ass way. Because
your brain is dumb.
With new emotions attached to it, and fucks everything up, and it makes the nostalgia feel all weird, and it turns people to smoking a bunch of like drugs and stuff like that. So
because you got to rebuild those memories.
So
you don't,
do not remember things.
You don't because you're not fetching memories. You're building them.
One reason why Dan, Jesse, and I are so successful both at this podcast and at our various professional activities.
We can't remember shit.
We don't remember. Like, everyone's like, people will write in. They'll be like, hey, it was really funny last week when you said this thing. And we'll be like, I have zero memory of what you're
saying.
Sounds
good to me.
Well, like go over a chat and we're just like, do you remember when I said this? Because someone said I said this.
My favorite thing is sometimes on the podcast, you listen back and you can hear us being like, we can't remember what we said earlier in the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's just a demonstration of how good we are at maintaining our actual proper memory, so that in a pinch, were we to need to access them, we could then access the memory.
Yeah.
But it would be the pure version of the memory.
Here's the full version, and after he says it, hold on for another few seconds, because there's a subtle...
Is this a hold on to your butts type situation, a la Jurassic Park, Samuel L. Jackson?
Oh, what?
You know, when he's turning on the power, you know, got to turn the power back on.
It's more of
park.
Your free association.
I mean, you know, it's not. There's nothing free about it.
I'm going to play the
it's
whole
cost,
part.
It's costing everybody
it's
a
about,
lot of time.
It's about 10 seconds. Okay. Just listen to the whole thing. All
right. Thanks, number one. He's my number one dad.
Wait. That's when they hugged at the end.
I was like, it's just like, Dan's just like, hey, you know what's really awesome on podcasts? A bunch of dead air.
Yeah. Well, you could hear the whistling noise of the ship.
I'm not sure what I was
He's my number one dad.
Mommy.
Yes.
Mommy.
Yes.
Mommy.
Yes.
Mommy.
Yes. Okay. Yes, we could hear the ambient noises from the Enterprise. However, I don't believe anyone's ever referred to it as the whistling noises
from
the ship.
Same thing.
Whistle. Mommy.
He's my number
Mommy.
One dad.
Mommy.
He's my number
Mommy.
One dad.
Mommy.
He's my number one
Mommy.
Dad.
Mommy.
He's my number Mommy. One dad.
It does make me think of the Whistle Stop Cafe. From that famous book, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, that was turned into that hit movie, I believe it was 1991, Fried Green Tomatoes.
Mm. Never heard of it.
Starring Kathy Bates and a bunch of other people.
And that person from the show Weeds.
Yeah, they're all great. All right, what were we talking about? Beverly Crusher.
Let's go play.
We touched on this briefly, but... this is another episode in which Beverly Crusher is required to save the day, but that's a trite way of saying it. She identifies what the problem is, right? First of all, she figures out what's going on. She comes up with a solution.
Well,
and then even though she's of course relying on her colleagues, she is effectively in charge of implementing that solution. And she also, as we mentioned, had to talk Picard out of like retaining command.
Yeah.
Right, so she's going all over the place, making sure shit gets done.
LaForge played a bit of a role in it,
too. Of course.
And O'Brien to a lesser extent.
They contributed, but it was interesting and also somewhat not surprising that Beverly was sort of in charge here in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the problem solving part, Riker was really good at just keeping shit at bay. You know, he was handling the Ferengi pretty well.
From Ferenginar.
Yeah, I did dig his techno babble crazy business. That was fun. It was funny, and it was very well performed by both Riker and the golem Ferengi.
Yeah, that was the other series of sound effects where you had to guess the order, but this one was like six sounds long. So
I
don't need to.
No, I would like to hear this. We don't have to drag it out, but I want to hear those sounds.
Okay.
Put them in the wrong order.
Okay.
We're not going to try too hard to guess the right order, but we want to hear them in the wrong order. We'll take a guess or two, and then we'll hear them in the right order. It's going to be fine. Don't worry, Dan.
It's going to be fine.
It'll be just fine.
The thing I'm loving here is like Dan looks really nervous. People are not going
to
like this.
No, I'm trying to figure out like which ones that I'm supposed to play because they're kind of like... The way I put them together was weird.
Because you don't label them anymore?
No, I label them. It's just there's I have two versions of some of them, long and short. And so
Come on. Right.
Jesse ain't taking none of your shit.
With 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now you do know what I
meant. Fuck.
Heisenfram.
I did it too soon. See, I'm fucking up.
With 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now you do know what a bilateral kellilateral is. The core element is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kellilacterals cross-linked with a redundant Mellicorts ramistat, 14 kiloquad interface modules. Don't touch that. You'll blow up the entire ferromantle drive.
Oh, what?
pyramidal drive. What I love is that in most of those clips, and we'll get to the order in a second, but most of those clips, it's it, the rhythm of it is sensible, 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 made up crazy words. Yeah.
Yeah. Heisenfram. Yeah.
Not all of them, but like most of those clips, that's where it's like that, 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 blurp. Yeah. I don't know the order. Jesse, do you have any? What do you think he slipped? You said there are six separate clips.
Well, actually, there weren't six. Well, there's six clips. I realized that only half of them, like.
So there's three clips.
So there were three clips.
The previous one had four clips. This one has three clips.
Well, this has four clips. There's actually two more, but they're later on in the episode, but it's part of the same gag. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Can you go through and number them? And then Jesse and I can shout out some numbers that will largely be guesses. And then we can see how close we got.
Number one.
With 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now, you do know what a bilateral kellilateral is.
That was number one.
Number two, Dad.
The core element is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kellilaterals.
Why is he breathing so heavy?
I know, that's...
The core element... is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kellilaterals.
It sounds like Jonathan Frakes is actually improvising this. I don't know if he is, but like it sounds like he is because of those weird breaths. Yeah. Number three, Dad.
Cross-linked with a redundant Mellicorts Ramistat, 14 kiloquad interface modules.
Number four, Dad.
Don't touch that. You'll blow up the entire pheromantle drive.
Oh, what?
Number five, Dad.
That is the Ferromantle drive unit.
Number six, Dad.
So, one more time, the Ramistat kiloquad capacity is a function, square root of the intermix ratio, times the sum of the plasma injector quotient.
But you even told us that those two are later in the episode.
Yeah, I know. I totally fucked this up. Oh, well.
I'm going to say...
2, 3, 1, 4.
I'm going to say exactly the same thing.
So you're saying...
2, 3, 1, 4.
So this...
The core
this
element...
is first...
is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kellilaterals.
And this is next.
Cross-linked with a redundant Mellicorts Ramistat, 14 kiloquad interface modules.
And this is three.
With 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now, you do know what a bilateral kellilateral is.
You got number four right, but it's actually, this is number one.
Cross-linked with a redundant Mellicorts Ramistat, 14 kiloquad interface
right.
Modules.
That's number one talking.
No, you said 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 1, 4 is what you said.
No, I'm saying you said that was number one, and that is number
this
one.
This is number
20
one.
20 of those. Being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal.
One, Dad.
Now, you do know what a bilateral kellilateral is.
Commander Riker is number one.
He's my number one dad.
That's not number one. That's Captain Picard.
You said this was number one.
The core element.
Yes, that's number one.
Yeah, it's
based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kellilaterals.
I'm listening to the voice of number one. That's number one.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, Riker, you're being silly. You're being squishy.
I am being somewhat silly.
You're being squishy. This is number one.
Cross-linked.
Yes!
With redundant Mellicorts Ramistat, 14 kiloquad interface modules.
Number two.
The core element.
No, that's Data.
It's based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kellilaterals.
Joke on this. This is number three.
With 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now, you do know what a bilateral kellilateral is.
Yeah. No, it's not funny to me anymore.
No, it's over. No, yeah, I see. How convenient. Well, here's another mispronounced Reno. He says,
Don't touch that. Blow up the entire Ferromantle drive.
And here's, and then here he says it again.
That is the Ferromantle drive unit.
Here's what
is it Ferromantle or Ferromantle?
Well,
crude but rude.
Here's this.
That is the Ferromantle drive unit.
Here's when the Ferengi says,
"What is a Ferromantle drive?"
The Ferengi actually, he says Ferromantle.
Now, what is a Ferromantle drive?
Now, I'm given to understand that both of you fellas are the types that use closed captioning. See anything in the closed captioning that gave any clues as to what the fuck this word is?
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay, you know what it is.
Uh-huh. Based upon closed captioning and Chakotea.net, which are not the same.
They're not the same. Chakotea.net is a resource where one may find transcripts of a large number of Star Trek shows.
Like, Discovery and Beyond, you have to look at actual transcripts, which is not Chakotea.net, which are basically just closed captioning. Yeah. But Chakotea.net is its own thing. Right.
What's the word?
It's this.
Is the what word? Is a ferromactyl drive?
Ferromactyl, like fractal?
Like firo, like F?
F-I-R-O-M-A-C-T-A-L.
Ferromactyl?
Yeah, but...
Ferrodactyl?
But Riker says ferromantle.
That is the ferromantle drive unit.
And then he says ferromactyl.
What is a ferromactyl drive?
It's, you know why it works? Because it's a made up word.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he misunderstood a made up word.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, but it doesn't, but this.
The Tarkasian razor beast.
Tarkasian razor beast.
There's no excuse for that.
I love it. There's no fucking excuse for that.
What the devil?
The shaky shuttle acting at the beginning. I just shaky wanted to, before I forget acting? That out. It was terrible. It was terrible shaky shuttle. When their shuttle was getting in trouble right at the beginning, you know, it was all like bouncing back and forth. Watch it. Load up the episode. Watch it.
Wait, did you
it.
Say
it's terrible?
Did
what
you
do
say,
you do when your shuttle's in trouble?
Did you say shaky shuttle acting or action?
Acting. Shaky shuttle acting. The actor is acting.
Acting like the turbulence.
Oh, acting like it's shaking.
Unlike on the bridge, normally they're pretty good. This is not any, you know, this is something they've honed over the years. They all like pretending like, oh, we're getting hit by phasers or whatever. But for some reason in the shuttle, and all these actors have done good shaky shuttle acting or shaky ship acting in the past. But for some reason, this did not. It was not well portrayed.
I'll have to go back and watch that because I didn't notice.
I recommend everybody go back and watch it, and you will see it's very shaky shuttle. No, the shaky shuttle acting. Well, what I mean to say is the shaky
the
shuttle.
The shabby shooby.
I'm trying to clarify that the shaky shuttle acting, as in acting as if the shuttle was shaking, was shaky.
Yeah, thank you.
Acting was shaky, and it was shaky acting. It was shaky version of the shaky acting.
Remember that
just
place?
Explain
that was,
it to me.
Remember that place called Shakey's?
Yeah,
It turned into Shoney's.
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, Shakey's turned into Shoney's.
No, you mean the specific location
in the Annandale? That Shakey's turned into a Shoney's.
Okay, maybe that's the case. The specific location.
I'm not saying that Shakey's as a franchise turned into Shoney's.
I should hope not.
Please do not. And remember, ever say that.
I love that these references are geographically and temporally narrow.
Remember, the Roy Rogers in Lowman's Plaza, which is now a Graham Park Shopping
now
Center.
Now it's a McDonald's.
More local flavors.
It turned into a Hardee's and then an Arby's, or was it the other way around? It turned into Arby's then a Hardee's.
It's a McDonald's.
But now it's a McDonald's. It's been a McDonald's.
I don't think it was ever an Arby's.
I thought at some point.
I apologize to the audience. Dan has been working on his tight five local stand up.
Did you remember Saxatones? You could get like all sorts of electronic.
Saxatones.
It was audio.
You're going to be talking about Luskins.
It was like electronic audio. They had an Errol's in that Lowman's Plaza back when it was Lowman's Plaza.
I know.
Back before Errol's Internet.
Errol's Internet.
The movie theater.
Yeah, and they turned into, it was a dollar theater, then they showed Indian movies later on.
All right.
Yeah.
Sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com, at It's Got Star Trek, and we'll give you the lowdown. We'll review all the defunct businesses.
It's Got Falls Church.
Within 10 or 15
you
miles
hear,
of
like,
where we live.
About some more shit you don't care about.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you suggest we do?
I suggest we start wrapping up our conversation
Riker,
about Rascals.
Riker, though, he did give a pretty bomb-ass, like, bomb-ass.
He said that really sincerely.
He gave a...
It was all this nostalgic thinking.
Oh, man.
You're back in the 90s.
Oh, man.
Like, that's the bomb.
Bummer. I said bummer, but I said bomber. Because I was thinking of bomb-ass. He gave a legitimate... double axe handle to the back of the Ferengi. That was classic. He could have done so many things, but he put his fists together and hit him on the back of the fucking trapezius. Like, shouldn't he even conked him? Shouldn't he even conked him on the head or something?
Doctor of trapezius.
He hit him with a Heisenfram Mellencourt emulator or whatever. I don't know.
Heisenfram Mellencourt.
I have a question about the Jeffries tubes.
Okay, Jesse and I will endeavor to provide an answer.
What is your question, sir?
Alternatively, an audience member could hear your question, and they could write in with their own comment at feedback@discussstartrek.com, and we might read it on the next episode.
Intense. That when Ro was all like, these feel like all spacey now or whatever. But Jeffrey's tubes, I was looking at them, I'm like, yeah, why do they have to be so uncomfortable to traverse? I get that they have to be small for some reason. But you look
tubes.
At the, but if you look at the floor,
we've discussed this before. No, the floor looks like you smash up your knees.
Yeah, exactly. The floor is like, it's got these like, it's like these spiky rubbery steel. Yeah. It's like not rubber. It looks like spiky steel, like circle mat things. Yeah. And it like would fucking tear your knees apart. And like, shouldn't they at least, if they're not going to have it padding, shouldn't they at least have some conveyor belt action or something like that?
Oh, people mover type thing.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
The smaller Guinan could fit in the Jeffries tube with her hat. If she was full size, regular size Guinan with the hat, wouldn't fit in
the
Jeffries
The tube. Fact that they left in her crawling in and bumping her hat and having to like navigate through with her hat a little bit, you know, just like a little awkward around
little
the hat.
Bit, yeah.
It awkward really accentuated the fact is like, why the fuck is she wearing the hat? Like, you don't need to wear the hat into the Jeffries tube. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, really.
I don't know. If it's a cultural thing, okay, that's fine. But I don't know.
The Ferengi were all complaining about how they allowed Riker to like do the emergency command override. You know, like when there's an emergency command override, I get that they have to say it out loud for the purposes of drama, but you'd think they'd have like just some super like button on the captain's chair or something that they could, so they wouldn't have to fall to the ground and be like, computer, lockdown commands, Riker 401 Alpha 7. You know, that's too
Ferengi
much time.
These Ferengi were very badly prepared.
And like, not to mention, yeah.
they didn't even realize that it was the fucking Enterprise. Yeah. Like, they could have done some research and like figured out like what was going on the Enterprise and who the people were and all that shit.
Okay, so first of all, I want to mention that I always mention this about like speaking their passwords out loud. That's terrible security. I don't know how they get away with that, but they do.
True.
Why don't they just have like PIN codes or 2-factor authentication on any major commands?
Yeah.
Anyway, just in the console.
But, fingerprints.
But what you were saying about them capturing the ship. Okay, so this is what these Ferengi were able to do. They were able to somehow capture two birds of prey.
Yeah.
And they decided that
I don't think they captured. I think they bought them. He implied that they were like surplus, but still.
But they had them and they used
where do you
them?
Buy a
do
you bird think, of prey? Yeah.
Okay, do you think a Starfleet like ship, like let's say they it was an Enterprise class, just a your average Starfleet ship, do you think it's going to be worth more than two birds of prey,
like a Galaxy class? A Galaxy class, yeah, I could see that being worth more than two birds of prey. Mm-hmm. I also don't see that getting defeated by two birds of prey, being crewed by not professional Klingon
and
warriors,
and only a handful of them.
But little,
or I'm thinking there's probably more.
Some little monster Ferengi, like little slithery
there's
monster
probably,
Ferengi.
Probably more of them on the ship. Yeah. But now they did say that, but plus your crew, we have your crew captured, which is somehow going
to
be worth
money.
Well,
they're going to send them down to the planet. And it was just such a funny idea to think like, oh yeah, you think people are just going to let you get away with like, capturing a bunch of slaves and making them mine shit on a
There's
on
a thousand people on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few Ferengi.
Or that like the Federation won't notice that one of its most popular ships has just like disappeared.
That's the other thing. Like, how are you, even if you were going to
somehow you didn't even know it was the Enterprise.
Even if you got this ship, right? Like, who's going to buy a fucking Enterprise? Like, you couldn't sell an Enterprise.
Right.
The only thing you could do with
it... If you buy the Enterprise, they're coming after you.
The only thing you could do with it is strip it down for parts and, use its parts. But but at that point, I don't know, is it worth it?
No. To be fair, I will say Damon Lurian did mention that he was going to sell it on the Romulan market.
Still, it's...
That I could see. The Romulans would pay because they could get intelligence off of it, right?
I guess they could study it, yeah. True. I guess that's true.
You got to get it to the Romulans in the first place.
You couldn't use it for anything except intelligence.
Yeah, and because it doesn't have completely terrible security, they're not having any luck actually getting into the computer systems, and one might have expected that. It's kind of like you're getting a little too big for your britches here kind of situation.
I like how Lauren totally abused like the Ferengi salvage code law. He's like, we're declaring your ship salvage, and we're taking the salvage, and under Ferengi salvage law, we can arrest you for interfering with our salvage operation
under our law.
Now the Ferengi, they Lauren did say that they weren't a part of the Ferengi Alliance, and the Ferengi Alliance washed their hands of the situation. But you know, the Ferengi Alliance, I'm sure they would probably do a lot of shit. Like the Ferengi Alliance would support some like a business endeavor, and if that business endeavor went sour, I could see them suddenly being like, no, we had nothing to do
if it got to the Negus. Yeah. Now the thing is again, this is late TNG, but it's early in the true evolution of Ferengi culture and lore. I don't believe we have the concept of the Negus yet.
Right, yeah.
And a lot of what we later learn about Ferengi culture is developed on Deep Space Nine and other series. So
Grand Negus.
Yeah, precisely. All that being said, and all the you know, I was going to say, you know, it's like, oh, I'm starting to think this episode might not be plausible.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of holes and a lot of suspension of disbelief, but I will also give them credit with the performances and the writing and the way they pull this together. It was fun. It was entertaining. Yeah, you sure. suspend your disbelief. And even the whole taking back the ship, it was
a neat little plan.
It was fun to watch. It was you didn't like think like, oh, that's so stupid. It's just kind of like, yeah. And again, it's because they picked Ferengi, right? You couldn't see them really. It would be harder to see them doing this exact plan against any Klingons or anybody like that. But because it's Ferengi, you're like, okay, this goofy plan is working because these are a bunch of dumbass, bumbling ass Ferengi monster pirates.
I thought Picard, like the whole like turning young thing, Picard was all casually talking about getting old again. He's like, well, yeah. I suppose I could go back to Starfleet, but then like, I think I would still be reeling from the fact that I just de-aged by like, what, 30 years or something?
This is typical Star Trek. Typical Star Trek style where they all adjust to the horrific circumstances really swiftly. Like when they get old really fast or they turn into fish people and they're like, oh, I guess I'm a fish person now. I'll just adjust to being a fish person.
And Troy was all like, you could spend a few years crawling through caves and digging up artifacts and still have enough time to become the youngest admiral in Starfleet history. That would be quite an asterisk next to that statistic.
Because he'd actually be 12 years older than a lot of them. Because he's like having to start over.
Yeah.
Or not even 12, even
he's
even
lived. I mean, if you want to take how many years he's lived.
He's in his 40s or something.
He's not point. Like his body is 12, but that doesn't mean he is 12. That means he is as long as he's been alive. So he's not the youngest.
Yeah. Anyway.
Whatever. It doesn't really matter.
Well, it's a classic way to look at time. Mm-hmm. I'm into it.
In the turbo lift, Riker shot like Picard like a good up and down look. He was like, this is weird. And then Picard was like, wah.
I really, really enjoyed how Picard went when the alarm was going off. Picard had to turn off his microscope and close his book before heading to try to solve the problem, because it was silly. I mean, it's sort of a silly thing to do, be like, oh, it's like a red alert, we're under attack. Gotta close my book, gotta push the off button on my microscope, don't want to waste power. But it's also very in character, and just the way it was directed worked. By the way,
if he was smoking a cigarette, he would have finished it.
By the way, do you know who directed this episode?
Yeah.
Initiate intruder alert.
Adam Nimoy.
Yes, Adam Nimoy. Leonard Nimoy. This is the very first thing he directed. He went on to have quite a good career directing, usually mostly for TV.
Directorial debut.
But this was his directorial debut.
Mm.
And it's a challenging debut, considering he's working with kids and Jonathan Frakes.
It was raining all the time.
All these people.
Raining all the time.
It was just raining. The weather was terrible. It's hard to shoot, film when it's raining.
Are you making a joke?
Yes.
Okay. it was really dry.
It was extremely dry. Dry toast.
Dry toast.
That's a Toast of London joke. Go watch it. Toast of London.
Beekeeper.
Beekeeper. I thought you said you were a beekeeper. No, I said it was a
that's
beekeeper.
That's the only episode Dan has seen.
It's a good one, though. It's got Morgana Robinson in it. She was on Taskmaster. What were we talking about? We were talking about Rascals.
Yeah, the directing. Adam Nimoy.
He was briefly married to Terry Farrell for about 4 years.
Yeah, just so ridiculous.
I think he's had a number of wives. I think he might have had a little trouble.
Terry Farrell.
Dax, who played
Perry Farrell. Wasn't that the singer from Porno for Pyros?
No, I'm talking about Terry Farrell, who played Jadzia Dax, married to Leonard.
Perry Farrell was
Adam Nimoy.
Perry Farrell was the singer for Porno for Pyros.
Yeah, and Jane's Addiction.
Yeah, and Jane's Addiction.
That's good. That's good. It's a different person though. In this case, different person.
Oh, Mike Watt was the bass guitarist in Porno for Pyros. I didn't know that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Yeah.
According to the Google says that he was bass guitar. Martin Lenoble was there, but I guess Mike Watt maybe filled in sometime. Okay, this is not.
He was probably Mike Watt turns up like has done a bunch of stuff like recently for like a bunch of bands. Mm.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah. Star Trek?
No, my question for you is,
what is going on?
Sort of. It's who in this episode do you think were The true rascals. Hmm. Who were the rascals?
Who were the rascals? Who were the rascals in
this? This episode's called Rascals. It's referencing rascals.
Well, the Ferengi were kind of rascally.
I think the Ferengi were the rascals.
They were the rascals. The yeah.
But
they're the most, yeah.
Picard was being a little rascally.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, we don't have anything to do. None of the games are working.
Well, they're taking all the adults down to the surface.
I realize how unusual this must seem.
I'm afraid I can only think of one way.
We should have access very soon. What the devil?
When you jump on a bed, that's a bit rascally.
Yeah, that was a little rascally. That was fun when they were bed jumping.
It was.
I bet
was
you're
cute.
A jumper. That made me think of jumping off a building. I didn't like when she said it like that. Yeah, I bet you were a jumper.
Because
like,
you've done that, right?
Yeah, I've jumped off so many buildings.
It's one of Dan's old habits.
They used to call him Dan Jumpin'.
Dan Jumpin'.
Hey, what's Dan up to?
That Dan Jumpin'.
He's jumping.
Dan Jumpin'. Dan just Dan jumping.
Have a second childhood without the pain of growing up again.
Ro is a very good artist with those crayons.
Those crayons.
How do you say crayons?
Crowns.
Crayons.
Crowns.
Crowns.
Do you really say that?
No, I don't.
How do you say it, Jesse?
Well, that's the wonderful crayons. Thing about crayons.
Crayons.
They can take you to more places than a starship.
I agree. I liked it. I dig that. I was a little thrown off by how good an artist Ro was with the crayon. Did you look at the picture?
Yeah,
if you actually
look
at the picture, I thought it was going to be some sort of like crude crayon drawing.
No, but it was good. But what I was saying earlier is that line, like, yeah, it's a cool line, and I understand it's like meaningful and everything. But it also kind of makes me think, like I said earlier, it sounds like she's talking down to her a little bit.
It does,
but I understand what they're getting. This is a classic sentiment that I'm always appreciative of when Ro's like all upset. She's like, this isn't some kind of glorious second child. Childhood, like our bodies have been violated. That was like, that was upsetting. Yeah. She says, doesn't that bother you? But then Guinan's like, sure, it bothers me, but at the moment I can't do anything about it, so I might as well enjoy it. That's a classic sort of like
it's a good philosophy.
Good philosophy. I'm having trouble with basic words today. Before you, character development was the phrase I couldn't remember before.
And the word philosophy.
Yeah, the word philosophy. It's
one,
good, that's,
one of the oldest words there.
Because it's true. When people tend to get... I know. It's true that like people tend to like... When people don't have control over something, often... They go the opposite route, and it makes them more angry. But that's when you should really be getting less angry, because it's not your
one
fault.
One of the core tenets of Stoicism that you cannot control what happens to you, only how you react.
It's not your fault that it's happening, so don't get upset. You know,
and even if it is, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's more to worry about than whether it's your fault, but still, like, if it's out of your control, like getting mad's not going to solve anything.
What's not out of our control
is ending the episode.
Is sticking to a reasonable amount of time discussing Star Trek.
Look at these fragments.
I think we've done that. Any final little bits and bobs before we announce what's going on?
I had two duty or no duties. But
okay.
One of them is, I know you guys are going to laugh at me for even including it, so maybe I'll only do one.
Now you got to do both.
So here's the first one. Duty or no duty?
Are you here to relieve me of duty?
Duty or no duty?
No duty.
That's a no duty.
Yeah,
duty.
That was no definitely.
I sometimes
duty.
Forget what it is. It's no duty.
Duty.
It's duty or no duty.
It's no. It's duty or duty. Otherwise known as duty or no duty.
Right. Duty he said duty.
He said duty. Yeah.
He said this was a no duty because he said duty.
Yes.
Yeah. So no duty.
Okay.
It was a pronounced British.
I really thought I had my head around this by this time, but you've confused me now.
That's why it's fun.
Let's do the next one.
Okay. Here's the next one.
You're not supposed to do anything. That's what relieved of duty means.
Duty.
That's a duty.
That's what relieved of duty means.
Yeah, definitely a duty.
Definitely a duty.
Definitely a duty.
And she even said the word relieved in there, which I think is a little bonus.
It is funny to think of that.
That's what relieved of duty means.
Because you can pee or poo.
It's like when you go to the bathroom,
you relieve yourself of the feces or the urine.
You relieve yourself of duty.
You don't have to deal with that duty.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, let's finish. That was Rascals. That was fun. I enjoyed that. That's a fun episode and a fun.
B'Elanna's on it.
And a fun
Chief
podcast.
O'Brien.
B'Elanna's in it.
So this B'Elanna's
was
in it.
This was episode 2.
Before this episode, I was telling Jesse to call bananas B'Elanna's, and I was telling him to call
blueberries blooper berries, but he had blackberries. So instead, he's supposed to call blackberries blooper berries.
Well, I'm glad you took the time to explain that.
Yeah.
Because Jesse said balanners.
This was episode 249 of the podcast. Next week, as you might guess, as the less numerically challenged among you might guess.
Numerically? Did you say numerically?
Yes, yeah, numerically.
Like turmeric? Numerically?
Yeah, that's a word, you know.
It's numeric. Turmeric. Numerically.
It's no, turmeric. Numerically.
Okay, whatever.
I'm pretty sure it's an acceptable pronunciation.
It's not numeric.
It's an acceptable pronunciation.
It's numeric.
Numerically, the...
It's not it.
Well, regardless.
I'm admitting that I'm wrong when I said turmeric. Jesse was like, it's turmeric. I was like, you're right, Jesse. It is turmeric. I was wrong. See, I can admit when I'm wrong.
And I assure you, one day, when it happens to be that I'm wrong,
oh boy.
I will admit that freely. In the meantime...
Hazardous. Next week...
Next week, we will be doing our 250th episode.
Would you like to play a game?
Let's go play.
For that episode, we will be discussing Star Trek Discovery's Through the Valley of Shadows. That's got Captain Pike in it. It's a good one.
And does anybody walk through the Valley of the Shadow of Death?
No.
They take a look at their life and realize there's nothing left?
No. Not in this case.
Okay.
All right. And the reason we're doing that is because we are going to be joined by regular contributor and question provider, Jesse from the Open Pike Night podcast.
It's like season two.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jesse's going to join us, and we asked him to select an episode that he wanted to discuss. And for those who are familiar with the Open Pike podcast, you will know that Jesse has a particular interest in the time crystal business.
Yes. It will be highly profitable.
Which is related to this episode, Through the Valley of Shadows, season two, episode, I don't know. 12, I think.
Thank you.
It's toward the end.
But we are excited to dip back into the...
Do dip. When dip. I dip, you dip, we dip.
Well, pretty much. Okay. Well, so we didn't start doing the podcast until partway through Discovery, right? So we haven't covered Discovery seasons one or two on the podcast. We've covered a few episodes here and there, the pilots and a couple of, you know, madness to make the crazy whale go mad.
But you see no evidence of that.
So this is a great opportunity to do another episode of Discovery. So we're looking forward to having Jesse join us. Looking forward to discussing that episode.
Excellent.
In the meantime, of course, you can follow us on social media, interact with us at It's Got Star Trek, Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all that business, Threads.
Thank you.
Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. Sign up for subscribe to us everywhere.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien.
And ask us questions. Ask us questions about Through the Valley of Shadows, or provide comments, or anything that came up in this episode. We'd be happy to discuss it with you.
Thank you.
So that'll do it for us this week. We hope you had a good one.
What was that, Jesse?
You talk about the Valley of Shadows.
Yeah, I was talking about the walk through the Valley of the Shadow of Death.
All right. So we'll talk, heavy shit, dude. We'll talk more.
You got to take it easy.
We'll talk more about that next week. In the meantime, have a good one.
Smell you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, number one. He's my number one dad.
He is indeed.
He's my number one dad.
Okay.
Come. I came to see how you're doing.
Well, I'll have to speak to my tailor, but otherwise I'm well, thank you.